Iran-Pakistan Gwadar project was initiated in June last year and is being completed at a fast pace, with an electricity transmission line laid from Iran to Gwadar helping the cash-strapped country lacking resources to run its oil and gas-powered plants.
Now, to have more insights on this, we are joined by political economist Mr. Shakil Ahmad Rami from Islamabad. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Now, Iran and Pakistan bilateral trade volume has exceeded $2 billion, a step forward in strengthening economic ties between the two countries. Sir, how do you see the economic relations unfolding between Tehran and Islamabad?
I think this is an excellent news. If we look around, so that is the news for which the people from the both sides of the border, they were expecting and they were asking their respective governments to enhance the bilateral trade. However, to strengthen our relationship on sustainable basis and fully exploit the potential of trade, there are a few things which both countries have to do. Number one, the banking channels. Both countries have to put focus on how they can improve the banking channels, because until unless we have functional and operational banking channels, we cannot dream about to enhance the bilateral trade. Right now, we are facing, both countries are facing problem when it comes to the payment structure. So the first thing the both countries have to do is to work on the banking channel. Right now, we have an option. Like Pakistan is a partner with the China, Iran is a partner with the China. So both countries can also use the yuan as a reference money, and they can also use the Chinese bank for their the banking channels. For example, ICBC is functioning in Pakistan. I'm sure ICBC or other Chinese bank must be working in China. So Pakistan should use that channel to strengthen our bilateral trade. Number two, we have to put on focus business rationales. We have to come out of this rhetoric or emotions, because economic relationship must be decided on the business rationales. We know that Pakistan and Iran, they are the brotherly countries. They enjoy a good relationship. But when it comes to the economic relationship, I think both countries must focus on the business rationale and move step by step.
Mr. Rami, what about electricity? The export to Pakistan is expected to double in the near future. This can be of great help for the energy-starved country. So the question is Iran coming up as an established energy partner for Pakistan?
As I mentioned already, so connections are the relationship in any field, including energy sector, must be welcome, because Pakistan need energy. But to decide on the future or the quantum of this cooperation, we have to take in care the business rationale. So we have to chart out a win-win cooperation formula. So we have to look into either to import electricity from Afghanistan is a win-win situation, or it is a Pakistan will get the benefit, or Pakistan will be losing its market. So we have to look into that, because when you have to import, you also have to take in consideration the cost of the production and transmission and the cost to the industry and the household. Similarly, Iran also have to take into consideration either it's a good formula to export electricity to Pakistan by keeping in a view. So what cost they can recover and how they can recover that cost, either it's a beneficial or not. So making any decision, we have to take in consideration the business rationale, number one. Number two, but if we look at that, can it be a long-term solution for the Pakistan? I don't think so it would be a long-term solution. It can be a short-term, but the long-term solution can be Pakistan can import other energy products from China, from Iran, like gas, like petroleum or petroleum products. But to produce electricity within the country, that would be more optional. But I strongly recommend Pakistan and Iran must enhance energy cooperation.
So, Mr. Rami, Tehran is investing in a number of infrastructure projects in Pakistan. So do you expect a strategic partnership between the two countries, with Islamabad battling with its worst economic crisis?
I think the cooperation in any sector is a good option. And that is the only option where the international community can live peacefully and can live in a good relationship. So investment from any type of investment from Iran, that must be the welcome in the Pakistan also. But again, we have to see, so where Iran is investing right now, either these are infrastructure projects, energy projects, or they are just creating the infrastructure for the export of the electricity. So again, going back to my other previous answer, so win-win formula. So we have to make an analysis, either these investments, they are the win-win formula, or there is just we have just an investment like any other investment from across the world. So, but definitely, even if Iran is investing in the Pakistan, that is a good proposition.
Last but not least, sir, Islamabad has been undergoing severe energy crisis, and the energy trade with Iran can help the country to come out of the difficult situation. So the question is, what is preventing Islamabad from realizing business ties with Tehran to its full potential?
As we already discussed, so one is geopolitics. Geopolitics is playing a bigger role. But fortunately, right now, the geopolitics is diminishing. So there is more space for Pakistan and Iran to enhance their relationship. Due to the geopolitics, the biggest hurdle which Pakistan and Iran they were facing, that was the banking channels. Because Iran was going through a different type of the sanctions. And due to those sanctions, it was really difficult for Pakistan to make the payment arrangements with Iran. And you know that Pakistan is also going through some economic crisis. We have to take some loan from the IMF or other international financial institutions. So we cannot take risk to just go for Iran and face the problems there. So, but definitely with the changing dynamics, that when the geopolitics is diminishing and the new players are emerging, especially after Iran, Saudi Arabia, so their agreement, it has created new space for the countries like Pakistan and other regional countries to work more closely with our Middle Eastern brothers.
On that note, I would like to thank political economist Mr. Shakil Ahmed Rami from Islamabad. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Now, let's see what people of the world had to say.
Hamida Noor Khadjak tweeted, "The cross-border trade between Pakistan and Iran is the economic lifeline for the impoverished Baluch people. The Pakistani government has realized this and has taken steps to regularize the trade, providing much-needed support to these communities." Raja Forghan Ahmed said, "The value of trade exchanges between Iran and Pakistan surpassed $2 billion for the first time in the history." Mike Delta tweeted, "Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif has reiterated Pakistan's commitment to strengthening bilateral relations with Iran in all areas of mutual interest, particularly trade, energy cooperation, security, and regional stability." Pakistan Perspective wrote, "Pakistan should enhance its trade with Iran and Afghanistan. Trade is the only solution."
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Russia and India are negotiating a free trade agreement to strengthen their growing commercial relations. This agreement aims to boost their economic ties and create opportunities for bilateral investment. Russian Trade Minister Denis Manturov, on his recent visit to India, said their country is paying special attention to the issues of mutual access of production to the markets of both countries. The minister expressed Moscow's interest in a free trade agreement with New Delhi.
Speaking at an India-Russia business dialogue hosted by the Federation of Indian Chambers of Commerce and Industry, Indian Foreign Minister Subramaniam Jaishankar stated that the FTA discussions between India and Russia-led Eurasian Economic Union were stalled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Indian government encourages following up on the talks as the deal will have a significant impact on the trade relation between the two countries. The Indian Foreign Minister added that the FTA negotiations between India and Russia are likely to deepen the economic relationship between the two countries, which have been steady for decades. The deal is also expected to promote greater cooperation in non-military projects and provide mutual access to markets. The FTA will facilitate collaboration in key areas such as oil and gas, gold and diamond, timber, pharmaceuticals, agriculture, aviation, railways, and logistics. The agreement, if successful, will be a significant development for the Eurasian Economic Union, which Russia is heading. India's participation in the FTA could pave the way for other Asian countries to join and bolster Russia's economic and strategic position in the region. According to financial experts, the FTA negotiations represent a major shift in the balance of economic power in the region.
Traditionally, Russia has been India's largest defense equipment supplier, and recently it has emerged as the largest oil supplier as well, replacing Iraq. According to Indian Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar, India's overall imports from Russia have almost quadrupled and reached $46.33 billion over the last fiscal year. The trade between New Delhi and Moscow has grown exponentially in the recent past following the increased purchase of discounted Russian crude oil after the country was put under sanctions since the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
During the recent conference held in New Delhi, the Indian Foreign Minister emphasized that India and Russia have already achieved the bilateral trade target of $30 billion before the target year of 2025. He said the increase in bilateral trade between April 2022 and February 2023 to $45 billion has given rise to concerns about trade imbalance, and both the sides need to work urgently to address this imbalance by tackling impediments, including market access, non-tariff barriers, payment-related matters, and logistics, while diversifying and expanding the basket of commodities. Russian Trade Minister Denis V. Manturov said that Russia is looking to increase imports of Indian machinery to improve the trade balance between the two countries. With Moscow and New Delhi having decided to ditch the dollar, payment issues have risen for both sides, as Russia has been grappled by Western sanctions since the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war. Addressing the issue, the Russian foreign minister said that Russia would consider the use of national currencies and currencies of friendly countries. For India, it too has been keen on furthering the rupee trade plan while working to resolve payment certification and compliance issues.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by the president of Indian Chamber of International Business, Mr. Manpreet Singh from Mumbai. Welcome to the program, sir. Now, let's begin by this question. To what extent do you think the free trade agreement between Russia and India is going to impact their economic relations, and what are the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead?
Well, this is a very interesting question, that free trade agreement between Russia and India. And it's honestly a very need of the hour arrangement that is needed. But that does not mean that it is going to be an easy one. The free trade agreement between India and any other countries is not easy, because we have a multilateral relation, and we work with a lot of countries, we work with a lot of regions, and India has always taken a lot of time to process free trade agreements. They go into too much detail. The government sees the pros, the cons. So although it would be very beneficial, because Russia is a big market for Indian consumers, it's still not an easy road. It's an uphill road. And when you talk about how much it will affect the economic relations, well, of course, it will add to the trade. And what will happen is, already in the last 1 year, the trade has doubled. It has crossed, I think, $30, $35 billion bilateral trade between India and Russia. And it is a huge possibility that it might double again in less than a year. Of course, it's due to many products like oil and defense and everything. But it is also adding a lot because of other products, especially food, medicines, because these are needed. And that's one of the major products that is going to be facilitating the free trade agreement, if any. And the challenges, of course, it's not an easy world out there today. There are many multilateral repercussions. We really don't know how that will play out.
Mr. Singh, with Russia being India's largest defense equipment supplier and recently emerging as the largest oil supplier, how can the two countries diversify their trade and tackle the trade imbalance?
That's a very interesting question that you've asked. And, you know, of course, the whole world knows that a major basket of India-Russia trade is oil and defense. And it has caused huge trade imbalances, of course. But like, you know, it's need of the hour that food is the new gold. And requirement of food to Russia and from India, it is one of the major products that can be pushed to balance out this trade imbalance. The second product that can do this is pharmaceuticals, pharmaceutical raw materials. And of course, we have Ayurvedic products and heavy machinery. I mean, a lot of products are now not easy to get into Russia, especially mining, vehicles. A lot of these products have the possibility to balance out this trade balance. And of course, it's not that easy, but it is a beginning. And I think when you talk about Russia being an all-weather friend of India and vice versa, there are many possibilities that bring out in the current world scenario. There's a lot of possibilities that Europe used to supply to Russia in the last few decades. Now, this supply has completely stopped. And India has got the inroads. Of course, there are other countries that are already jumped in to take that pie. Of course, Turkey supplying huge quantities of food and other raw materials to Russia. China, of course, is supplying the same. So it is actually a crowded space for India to get into. And but yes, it is definitely a possibility. Pharma can take it up. Food products can definitely take it up.
So, Mr. Singh, what are the key areas of collaboration that are expected to be covered by the free trade agreement, and how is it going to help in the economic growth of the two countries?
The world is a very different place today. And, you know, we find that the challenges are different as we get up each morning. For every country, it's not an thing that we, the people of so many countries, can be proud of. But yes, it is the changing world scenario and we need to adjust. Life is all about change and change is the only constant. So when we talk about the free trade agreement that may or may not happen between India and Russia, of course, both the countries need it to increase trade because there are certain barriers, tariff barriers, non-tariff barriers that come into play between any two countries that would like to enhance trade. And what happens is, when you're talking about free trade agreements, there's always a white list and there's always a black list. Of course, the goods that one country is good at would be hindering their economic growth if they allow duty-free imports, and vice versa. So when you talk about a free trade agreement between India and Russia, well, there are so many products that India can definitely export to Russia, let it be tea, coffee, heavy machinery, vehicles, commodities, quite a bit of them. And when we talk about Russia to India, of course, there's already oil and defense. But when you talk about the other products, you talk about heavy engineering, you talk about technology, you talk about IT, you talk about research. Russia has been good at research and research products like mining. These are the sectors that will definitely help the free trade agreements to come into place.
And last but not least, Mr. Singh, with Russia under U.S. sanctions, the two countries are expected to trade in non-dollar currencies. So with the dollar being bypassed, what impact is it going to have on the global economy?
You know, when you talk about dominance of any currency or any global currency, we have seen that, you know, the only person or the only people who get affected are the common people in those countries. Any sanctions, I mean, they can be justified, they can be unjustified. There can be many reasons for sanctions. And you have to understand that, you know, it's very easy to put sanctions on any country, but it's not so easy to take them back or to remove them. So this is one of the most difficult challenges. So when you talk about sanctions and you talk about alternate currencies to the US dollar, well, definitely the interesting part is that India has been pushing the Indian rupee to many countries in recent times, not only Russia. And what happens is, because India is buying a lot of products to the whole world, there was a time where India commanded about 30 to 35% of global trade a few centuries ago, and now it is less than 3%. So there is a huge scope that can be enhancing India's share in the global markets. So what happens is the global currencies like the US dollar and anything, although they help, they aid, but they also impede in certain times, because your currency volatility, your internal issues, your external relations, they affect the fluctuation of the US dollar and how the Indian rupee or the foreign currency is pegged to that directly or indirectly, or how the exchange rate fluctuates with respect to this currency.
There you have it, the president of Indian Chamber of International Business, Mr. Manpreet Singh from Mumbai. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
The poll lady tweeted, Russia and India are discussing free trade agreement despite calls from West for India to break away from its old ally. Talks are ripe about signing of a cooperation between Maharashtra government Moscow and Uttar Pradesh government Moscow city government for development projects. Panit Kimasya said, here comes the big one. Russia and India are discussing an FTA, free trade agreement. The storyteller tweeted, the FTA is expected to balance out trade with exports from India after goods flowing into the country from Russia went up fourfold.
And that was our episode about the present status of Iran's economic relations with Pakistan and also the growing commercial bonhomie between New Delhi and Moscow. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
China has denounced U.S. plans to send nuclear ballistic submarine to South Korea. Beijing says planned deployment of SUB and other strategic assets to Korean Peninsula is result of America's selfish geopolitical interests. The comments come after Seoul and Washington announced declaration reaffirming nuclear umbrella to counter threats. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more, please. According to RT, U.S. plans to send submarines armed with nuclear weapons to South Korea. That will likely aggravate tensions in the region, China's foreign ministry has said. Earlier this week, U.S. President Joe Biden announced a deployment with his South Korean colleague, Yoon Suk-yeol. Speaking to the press recently, foreign ministry spokesperson Mao Ning argued that the U.S., in order to realize its own geopolitical interest and disregarding regional security, insisted on making use of the peninsula issue to create tension. She went on to accuse Washington of being stuck in a Cold War mentality, as well as undermining the nuclear non-proliferation system and efforts to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. Recently, President Biden received his South Korean counterpart at the White House where the two leaders unveiled the Washington Declaration. Speaking to reporters, the U.S. head of state proclaimed that extended deterrence against North Korea's nuclear and missile threats would have a nuclear dimension as well. Biden claimed, "We will have visits to port visits of nuclear submarines and things like that." The U.S. president also claimed that to ensure even closer cooperation and closer consultation, the two nations have also agreed to establish a body called the Nuclear Consultative Group. Peace can be achieved on the Korean Peninsula, Biden argued, through the superiority of overwhelming forces. Pyongyang has test-fired more than 100 missiles since the beginning of 2022, and this month alone tested its first solid-fuel intercontinental ballistic missile and a nuclear-capable underwater attack drone. Washington and Seoul perceive the DPRK's increased military activities as a security threat and have stepped up their joint drills on the peninsula in response. North Korea, in turn, says its missile program is defensive in nature, accusing the South Korea and U.S. of plotting an attack. The country has also vehemently protested against joint defense maneuvers by Washington and Seoul, describing them as provocations. Meanwhile, the website of Democracy Now! Wrote the announcement that the U.S. would send nuclear-armed submarines to South Korea is a very provocative and dangerous move. It's the first time that the U.S. nuclear weapons have been on or around the Korean Peninsula in 40 years. In fact, most Americans have no idea that the nuclear crisis actually began with the U.S. bringing nuclear weapons in South Korea from 1956. 3 years after the signing of the ceasefire, and had them there up until George Bush Sr. So that is not only a provocative act directed at North Korea, but also at China. And this is actually throwing fuel into a fire that has been increasingly dangerous. And the situation is just getting even more dangerous. There is a three-star general, Dan Leaf, who says, "Of all the conflicts currently taking place right now, whether it's between U.S. and China over Taiwan or the Russia-Ukraine conflict, that the Korean Peninsula is perhaps the one that may be the closest to a nuclear war. So it is a very dangerous moment." And the fact that the U.S. will be sending U.S. nuclear submarines to the Korean Peninsula, and for Biden to make such a statement, that is akin to Trump's Fire and Fury era, where he threatened to totally destroy North Korea. This is a wake-up call for the American people and obviously for South Koreans, who feel that Yoon is basically drawing the Korean Peninsula on the front line of the U.S. war against China.
Economic Divide.
The topic of de-dollarization has been making headlines recently, And even though there are deniers that the dollar days may be numbered, there's one group of countries that believes its use is not a prerequisite any longer. That grouping, BRICS. How they are doing this is the topic of today's program. Some of the headlines coming up in today's program: BRICS de-dollarization. Brazil, India, China, Russia, and South Africa, they're the BRICS countries. Brazil has said, why base trade on the dollar? Also, trade in national currencies is at the forefront of the de-dollarization efforts. Then, a very big deal of what BRICS is going to do, not yet, but is in the works, and that's a BRICS common currency. It's going to impact the dollar. Obviously, the dollar's negative impact is what this is going to do on the world economy. It's going to be to the advantage of the BRICS countries. And also, a BRICS bank is in the works. Next, the world monetary reset. That's right, BRICS reserve currency is going to be backed by gold, and BRICS countries will focus on mutual global finance.
Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has just made a successful visit to China, which has generated optimism for a growing partnership between Brasilia and Beijing for a more united front against the hegemony of the U.S. 15 bilateral agreements and memoranda of understanding were signed. They included investment deals, research and development plans, food standards, and technology transfers. But the most significant part of da Silva's trip to China was the fact that he attended the inauguration ceremony of the new president of the new development bank, Dilma Rousseff, the former Brazilian president, at the bank's headquarters in Shanghai. The NDB is the product of a partnership among BRICS countries. It's a multilateral development bank established by Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, namely BRICS, in 2015, and mobilizes resources for infrastructure and sustainable development projects in BRICS and other emerging economies and developing countries. It's also set to play a crucial role in the global trend to move away from the hegemony of the U.S. dollar. Top Russian official has reportedly claimed that the countries of the BRICS alliance are working on creating their own currency. The currency could benefit China and other BRICS members, and not the West. China are looking to eliminate the U.S. dollar to settle payments in their native currencies. India has also been making consistent efforts to replace the dollar with the rupee as the global reserve currency. New Delhi is offering countries facing dollar shortages to settle their trade payments in the Indian rupee.
Well, the subject of this program, BRICS, has so many entries when it comes to the social posts. It was very hard for us to pick some, but I think we did okay with some of the posts that we picked. First up, for the first time, the BRICS countries have a larger share of the world gross product, domestic product, that is, than the G7. So that's a major achievement for the BRICS countries. Next up, we went to a website, U.S. dollars reserve currency status, history and future as the de-dollarization movement accelerates. It went on to say, let's take a look at the fascinating past and the complex future in a multipolar world. Now, America's future, in that respect, it took a look at the U.S. elites and how most people are caught up in a collective delusional bubble. That's how he described it. And he said, here are some simple truths. The demand for the U.S. dollar around the world will fall steeply over the next few years. The less demand for U.S. dollars in global trade and forex will mean less value for U.S. dollar. And that's basic economics. This means higher interest rates, higher yields for bonds, and higher costs for imports. Of course, this would result in higher debt payments for the U.S. government, which means austerity and higher taxes. We went to another website for our next entry. Beautiful things are happening in geopolitics, that is. True freedom is flourishing from Asia and Africa to Latin America as the juggernaut of multipolar world rolls forward. Went on to say U.S. is in denial. Americans are in for a rude awakening. mainstream media pundits and politicians are still engaging in bravado about the supremacy of the U.S. dollar. However, events can unfold like an avalanche. More than 12 countries have sent in their applications for BRICS membership. As South Africa's foreign minister admitted, South Africa is holding the current BRICS presidency. And take a look at this map. What would a BRICS world look like? As you can see, aside from the five countries, these are the other countries. And what's more alarming for the Western countries like the U.S. is how much of the world will be part of that. And of course, that for the U.S. and Western countries is not a good sign. And finally, imagine a BRICS plus with three oil giants, namely Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Iran, and perhaps even the UAE, Mexico, Venezuela, and Nigeria. BRICS plus can account for 60% of the world's oil production. How hard will it be to create a new currency that's backed by oil, or even a combo of commodities like oil, natural gas, wheat, iron, or etc.? Remember that Russia and Iran are the number one and two producers when it comes to natural gas. All right, that was quite a mouthful when it comes to the websites that we covered for you, but we figured it's important. Let me introduce our guest for our first segment of the Q&A. Joining us first is, let's see who I have, Linji Chuzanadu. He's a geopolitical analyst. His focus, interdisciplinary studies in sociology, business, and international affairs. Linji Zanadu, welcome to Economic Divide. Taking a look at how BRICS countries are moving towards de-dollarization is my focus in this question. The Brazilian president in particular traveled to China recently, and he asked some key questions. Every night I ask myself, Lula said, why do all countries have to base their trade on the dollar? Another question, why can't we do trade based on our own currencies? And also, he said, who was it that decided that the dollar is actually the currency after the disappearance of the gold standard? Do you think he's asking the right questions?
Of course. I mean, he is certainly asking the right question. I mean, the Anglo-Saxon financial hegemony, such as the legacy from the British Empire since the 19th century, you know, were using the pound as the reserve currency. So American just practice what is left over by the British Empire. So the whole idea of using dollar is actually to facilitate so-called the core economic position of the West. That is to say, only the Anglo powers deserve to be the key decision maker of the entire world's population and then their livelihood. Also, such things such as the dollar system was based on the notion of the white supremacy. That is, only the white countries have the moral duty to decide the economic outcomes of the non-white nations.
All right. At this point, Robson Cardoc Valdez joins us. He is our next guest. He holds a postdoctoral fellow at the Institute of International Relations at the University of Brasilia. And he's also author of the book Foreign Policy and the International Insertion of the BNDES During the Lula Government. Robson Cardoc Valdez, welcome to Economic Divide. The creation of a common BRICS currency, that's becoming something, it's not becoming, that's one of the goals of the BRICS countries. And, of course, that's important due to the U.S. Dollar's increasingly negative impact when it comes to international markets. Does this mean that a bank like that of the BRICS will have this currency in order to, let's say, finance trade relations between the BRICS countries? And, of course, what kind of impact is that going to have on their economies, given the fact that the proper infrastructure is still not yet in place?
Well, I believe that the creation of a single currency for the BRICS is still a long way off due to the large macroeconomic asymmetry between these countries. But the use of local currency, as I said before, in their bilateral trade between these countries, is a great idea for emerging economies. So I think that if we take this idea of using local currencies first, that would be a very movement toward the creation of a BRICS currency in the future. Because the asymmetries, the economic asymmetry between this country, China and Brazil, India and China, India and Brazil, South Africa, Russia, it's very difficult to for all these countries to get into an agreement, macroeconomic agreement, to put forward a single currency.
Time now for the InfoNews section of the program. First item that we're taking a look at is what concerns the EU, and that's food costs. That's a big deal for the EU at this point, and maybe the whole world, as a matter of fact. But this particular one focuses on the food costs in the EU, where food prices have continued to soar. The cost of essentials, for example, in France and also in Spain, are, I guess, hitting record levels. They just keep increasing. For example, in France, let's take a look at the cross-section based on this entry. Chicken has risen 18%, carrots 33.5%, butter 23.9%. So it shows how much of an increase this particular case in point France is experiencing when it comes to food inflation, if you want to call it that. Next up, talk about inflation. Let's take a look at what's happening in the UK. Inflation there also is bad. It has hit its worst. And it is the worst in Western Europe. Britain's consumer price index is standing at 10.1% year on year for the month of March. And let's take a look at some of the examples when it comes to food prices in the UK. Olive oil has risen 49%, milk 38%, and that's the fastest increase in 45 years. So obviously people there in the UK are not enjoying what's happening to them. Next up, a concern for the U.S. economy, and it is about U.S. lending, in particular from banks. U.S.'s credit crunch, which is now something that it's experiencing, people in the U.S., Americans, well, it has started with a big drop in lending amid tightening standards, again, from banks or financial institutions. This comes after massive deposit runs caused two lenders, well, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, to fail within days. Finally, taking a look at China's economy, it seems like they are doing well. Actually, it grew at 4.5%. It's not bad. It beat expectations. Not for China, though. China wanted 5% or more for its GDP growth. The latest economic data, it's suggesting that the world's second largest economy is firmly on a recovery path after the end of the pandemic curbs. All right, those were the topics we picked.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
It's time now for the in-depth section of the program. We're going to take a look at the BRICS countries as a whole and basically reveal to you the power that they have at this point, because they've developed and morphed into something much bigger than the way that not only were they covered in the news, but also the advancements that they have made. So let's get going. When it comes to the BRICS countries, aside from Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, there's another important development which has happened in the past year. And that is that a considerable number of countries have applied for membership. The Russian foreign minister says 20, but we've counted 17. But they include countries like Iran, Turkey, Mexico, Indonesia, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Egypt. Now, the group of BRICS emerging economies is so big that it is said to be the world's largest market. That's right. That's how much they have improved. And we're going to prove that to you in the next few graphs. So stay put. First, BRICS population, that has reached almost, let's see here, how much has it reached? Almost 3 billion, okay? And that accounts for 41.6% of the world's total. The GDP, it's almost $16 trillion, and that equates to a 19.8% share of the world's total. That's big. terms of what it represents vis-a-vis the world. Anyways, when you combine its shares of, let's say, exports and imports, which is what we picked here, that amounts to $6.14 trillion, correct? Let's see if I'm right on that or not. Yes, that's right. And put that in perspective, that's 16.9% of the world's total. Now, the following graph puts things into perspective, namely how far BRICS has progressed, especially when it comes to the G7 group of countries. And for the first time, BRICS' share of the world's GDP has surpassed that of the G7. So that's a huge deal. Next, you have BRICS' combined GDP. This particular piece of information is quite remarkable. It has grown more than 300% in the last decade, and that's while the developed world grew 60%. And in terms of de-dollarization efforts, let's take a look at some of the developments in that department. First, Brazil and Argentina, they have created a common currency system. So that's something that's very big when it comes to the Latin American countries. Then UAE and India are using rupees for non-oil commodities. India is pushing for its rupee to be internationalized, just like China is. Then Russia and Iran, they have launched a cryptocurrency that is backed by gold. That's just one of the moves that Russia and Iran have done, but they are also trading in their national currencies. And when it comes to China, well, it has been really busy. First, with Brazil, it announced that it will trade directly, exchanging yuan for the Brazil's money. Trade with Russia will be done in the yuan. Then the GCC countries of the Persian Gulf will sell oil in yuan to China, and it will trade in yuan also with Iran. All right, let's bring back our guests and see what they think. Linji Cho-Zanadu joins us. He's a geopolitical analyst. Rejoins us. Welcome back to Economic Divide, Linji. Let's take a look at the world and how it's poised for what's been called a monetary reset. At least that's what many are saying. I don't know if you agree or not. And when it comes to the BRICS, well, they are going for their own reserve currency, which is backed by gold. How do you think this goes hand in hand when it comes to the de-dollarization efforts that many of the BRICS countries, if not all, are opting for right now?
You know, gold as a reserve system will provide a sort of return to the, you know, old system, the Bretton Woods legacy. But this means to restore the international financial market by using the traditional method. The real commodity, therefore, will play a key role, in such kind of a way, such as gold or other kind of, financial instrument in real sense. A larger part of the American and the Western economies nowadays are based on so-called know-how, you know, like patents and intellectual properties, media and such way. So the actual substance of the economy is rather postmodern. So the BRIC countries are often the traditional societies that have distaste for the liberal capitalism. The death of liberal capitalism is not only a phenomenon we see in the BRIC economies, and we can also see, for example, in France recently, you know, the protests against increase of pension age. But what the current world is experiencing now is a call to return to the human value, I believe. Obviously, the dollars and the McDonald's, they don't deserve such kind of purpose. I mean, they don't serve such purpose. And the more countries will choose, perhaps, the new currencies. And the recent episode in the Silicon Valley Bank crash also puts a good reminder for many foreign countries.
During his trip to China, the Brazilian President Lula da Silva called on developing countries to work towards replacing the U.S. dollar with their own currencies in international trade. Brazil and China have already agreed to do their business and trade in their own local currencies. Lula's call to shed dollar dependence echoes Beijing's increasing efforts to promote the use of its own currency in settlement of cross-border commodities trades. China is now seeking to strengthen the role of the world's second largest economy in the global financial system. The Brazilian president has been an outspoken advocate for a multipolar world. Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa trying to position themselves as representatives of the global south, providing an alternative model to the G7. BRICS countries have now overtaken G7 in the share of the world's GDP, and that this trend can be expected to continue. The current BRICS 5 now contribute to 31.5% of the global GDP, while the G7 share has fallen to 30%. BRICS is expected to contribute over 50% of the global GDP by 2030, with the proposed enlargement almost certainly bringing that forward. China's GDP actually overtook that of the U.S. in 2015 when comparing economies in purchasing parity terms. BRICS is now emerging as an alternative power to the Western-dominated world order. Iran, which holds the world's second-largest gas reserves, has applied to join the BRICS group. Iran's membership in the BRICS group would result in added values for both sides. Saudi Arabia is also trying to join the bloc. Along with Saudi Arabia and Iran, Algeria has also applied to join BRICS, with Turkey and Egypt expected to become additional members soon.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. The question we want to ask in this section is, what's the big deal about the use of the US dollar in the global trade? First of all, the US dollar is the dominant force in global finance. This can be best illustrated by the US dollar's status in global oil trading. Most of the trade is denominated in the US dollars, but here is what might not make sense to many. Why is that the case when neither the barrels of crude in terms of country of origin nor the parties trading it have anything to do with it? Meanwhile, approximately half of global trade is invoiced in US dollars. This disproportionately large reliance on the US dollar is in spite of the United States accounting for just over a tenth of global trade. The dollar's dominance in global trade means the burden of dollar-denominated debt for other nations rises and falls with the exchange rate. This destabilizes the economies of the countries. It is now common knowledge how the U.S. has weaponized the dollar against countries that don't follow the U.S. lead when it comes to foreign policy issues. And for those dollar deniers, the U.S. using the dollar as a weapon is being challenged big time. Emerging global economies such as China and India are stepping forward to trade in their own currencies. The BRICS, Brazil, Russia, China, India, and South Africa countries are exploring the creation of a common currency for trade amongst themselves. This new financial arrangement could be announced as soon as in August 2023 at the forthcoming BRICS summit in South Africa. Can't wait until that summit takes place. That does it for this Quick Take section.
The Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva said it best when he visited China. He said the creation of the new development bank shows that the Union of Emerging Countries is capable of creating social and economic changes that's relevant to the world and has great potential. Countries such as Iran, Russia, China, and a host of other countries have de-dollarized to a very large degree, if not completely. Now, when the infrastructure is completely put in place, you're going to be ready for just a fair and just world. Believe me, that's what they are actually promoting. Free from Western diktats, like from the U.S. That does it for this edition of the program. I really enjoyed this topic. However, if you think we left anything out, please let us know. And any critiques along with that, from Ikobe Takwe and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
After Algeria, another African economy, Tunisia, said it seeks to join the BRICS, a group of fast-growing emerging industrial countries with diversified economies that includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RIA Novosti, Tunisia is considering becoming a member of the BRICS economic bloc. The spokesperson for the pro-presidential July 25th movement told Russia's RIA Novosti news agency recently. Mahmoud Ben Mabrouk cited unnamed sources in the North African country's government as saying the option of joining the organization, comprising Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, is being considered among the other possibilities. Ben Mabrouk said, "I have information that Tunisia is seriously considering joining the BRICS group." Earlier this week, Tunisian President Kais Saied spoke out against foreign diktats from the International Monetary Fund, IMF, which is in stalled talks over a bailout package for the cash-strapped nation. The head of the state highlighted that the terms of a $2 billion loan deal proposed by the Washington-based organization would worsen the poverty crisis in the heavily indebted country. The deal, which was supposed to be approved in December of 2022, was postponed after Tunisia failed to meet key commitments. The IMF has pushed the government to remove state subsidies on basic goods, including food and energy, and reduce the public wage bill. The government of Tunisia, which is on the brink of a full-blown balance of payment crisis, has proposed a 26.4% cut in subsidy expenditure to $2.89 billion in its 2023 budget. However, it has not raised fuel prices this year, apparently to avoid public anger after inflation reached 10.3%, the highest level in four decades. According to Heritage Times, Tunisia seeks to break free from IMF and join BRICS countries' bloc. Tunisia is eyeing a potential alliance with the BRICS nations' bloc, which includes emerging economies. BRICS members currently account for nearly a quarter of the world's gross domestic product GDP. According to Mahmoud Ben Mabrouk, a spokesperson for the pro-presidential July 25th movement in Tunisia, the country is currently negotiating the terms for joining the bloc. "We will accept no dictates or interference in Tunisia's internal affairs. We are negotiating the terms, but we refuse to receive instructions and the EU's agenda," said Ben Mabrouk in remarks to the Arab news agency. Tunisian President Kais Saied has been critical of what he sees as the IMF's meddling in his country's affairs, particularly with regard to the organization's offer of $1.9 billion in loans. Mabrouk claimed that joining the BRICS bloc would allow Tunisia to benefit from significant economic gains that would improve social conditions within the country. Heritage Times HT had earlier reported that Algeria, Africa's largest natural gas exporter, is also perfecting moves to join the BRICS economic group, according to Ben Mabrouk.